This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 7 years ago, scholar Henry Louis Gates Jr. paged through Oxford's American National Biography for information on a man named James McCune Smith. He was the first professionally trained black physician in the United States, the first African-American to run for national office, a prominent abolitionist, but something was wrong. Dr. Smith's biography wasn't there. Since then, Professor Gates has spearheaded a massive project to collect the lives of African Americans who should be remembered, but like Dr. Smith, are too often overlooked. The result is an 8-volume African American national biography that includes more than 4,000 lives and counting. Professor Gates and co-editor Evelyn Higginbotham join us in just a moment. Later in the hour, we'll have expert advice for those of you still struggling to assemble your Valentine's Day mixtape. It's not too late. But first, if you'd like to nominate someone for the African American National Biography, or if you have questions about the project, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can also comment on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Henry Louis Gates Jr. is director of the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for African and African American Research at Harvard University. He joins us now from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on the program again.
Hey, Neil. Nice to be here.
And James McCune Smith is hardly the only African American who should have been but wasn't in the in the American National Biography.
No, it was a shock to me. Our editor at Oxford, the director of the reference division, Casper Grathwall, contacted me and asked me to write an essay from the new American National Biography about an African-American about whom Americans should know more. And so I didn't want to write about W.E.B. Du Bois, and I didn't want to write about Booker T. Washington or George Washington Carver or Sojourner Truth or Harriet Tubman. Everyone has heard of them. So I looked for my two heroes, my true heroes. One was James McCune Smith, and the other was William S. Scarborough, equally fascinating as James McCune Smith, the great classical philologist, the first black member of the Modern Language Association, president of Wilberforce College, and neither was there. And so I jumped on the phone to Casper Grathwall, and I said, this is a problem. What are we going to do about it? And he said, well, why don't we do a supplement to the American National Biography? I said, supplement? We need to do an African-American National Biography. And he laughed, and we talked about it, and I went to my best friend and colleague, Evelyn Brooks Higginbotham, who, of course, is here in the studio with me. And we said that we were going to edit the A and B. No one thought that we could do it. You see, Neil, until we published this, the best biographical dictionary of black Americans contained 626 entries. And we declared that we were going to publish 8 volumes with 4,000 entries. And all these years later, I'm pleased to say that we've done it. And W.S. Scarborough's there, James McCune Smith's there, and a whole bunch of other people who wouldn't be in any major biography of Americans without the AANB.
And Evelyn Higginbotham, let me introduce you, co-editor of the African American National Biography and Victor S. Thomas Professor of History and African and African American Studies at Harvard, as Professor Gates said, with you there in the studio in New York. And tell us a little bit about Rayford Logan. He was your professor.
He was my professor at Howard University, and he was also a very longtime family friend because he had actually gone to school with my father. So I was a contributor to his dictionary of American Negro biography, and I was always very interested in this idea of biography and the individual in history. When Professor Gates asked me to work with him, he and I both drew up a long list of names that we looked in the American National Biography for and couldn't find many, many names that appeared in the Dictionary of American Negro Biography that Rayford Logan and Michael Winston had co-edited. And the truth of the matter was that many of the names in the Dictionary of American Negro Biography were very prominent names in the nation.
Another person you met as a child was Carter Woodson, and he is, of course, a famous educator himself. But nevertheless, isn't there a quote by him? I drive past a wall here in Washington, D.C. with a quotation from Carter Woodson on it almost every day. And it says, we don't need separate African-American history. We need American history to incorporate African Americans fairly without bias.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a good quote, but he had so many wonderful quotes. And one of his quotes, because it was used in my home all the time, was that we work to refute the lie that the Negro has no past, that he has made no contribution to American history, and that he has no past worth respecting. I think he devoted his life to identifying what the African American contribution was. So in order to do that, obviously, he had to understand where black people fit into the larger American narrative, but at the same time, he had to pay explicit attention to the contributions that black people played not only within the larger nation, but within their own communities.
Mm. Yeah, Neil, you can't inform the shape of the center unless you explore and explicate the margins. And that's what Carter Woodson did. I mean, after all, he was trained at Harvard, second African-American to get a Ph.D. in history, 1912 after the great W.E.B. Du Bois. But he went on to found Negro History Week, which became Negro History Month, which became Black History Month, which became Afro-American History Month, and now it's African-American History Month. I think in 20 years, Neil, it's going to be Neo-Nubian History Month.
In any case, it's February.
It's February.
It is February, but remember, he founded the Association for the Study of Negro Life and History, as it was called then. Mm-hmm. So he was very explicit about studying the contributions of black people themselves. And one of the issues that we faced in doing this project was the idea that maybe what we should do is to just really try to augment the American Negro biography, I mean, American national biography mm-hmm. with African American names, just populate it with African American names. But what we realized is that we discovered thousands upon thousands of names, and it just wouldn't have been feasible to take so many thousand names and put it into the American Negro into the American National Biography. We would have been overrepresented as a population within that.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is that all of these names that we published, all these biographies that we published will be online through Oxford University Press, which also publishes the American National Biography and the British version, which is called the Dictionary of National Biography. So that and in the digital world, there's a seamless relationship among the collections, so that each one is separate. The British biographies are separate. The American biographies are separate. The African-American biographies are separate only because you organize them that way. As soon as you push another button, they're all integrated. Hmm. So it's like having your cake and eating it too. That's the good thing about working with Oxford University Press. In fact, Oxford has started the African-American Studies Center, which is the largest online database in history of over a dozen major black reference works, including the Africana Encyclopedia, which Kwame Anthony Appiah and I edited just a few years ago. So we are integrating all of these 4,080 African Americans into the larger database of important biographies of British and American lives. But we also are making them accessible separately because there was a vacuum of these names.
We're talking with Professors Henry Louis Gates and Evelyn Higginbotham, co-editors of the African American National Biography. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's start with Jennifer. She's calling us from Three Rivers in Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Well, I have a story to tell you about. I work in a library, and I was given a list from a professor of names to look up for a history class, and the name Shelby Davidson is on this list. And I searched and I searched, found nothing. By using the internet, I found out he was an African-American inventor who had invented something to do with the post office. My point to you is that I even looked in Black American, African-American encyclopedias. It's a community college, so it's a small library, but I searched every book I can find and looked in the index. So I'm wondering if perhaps his name might be found in yours.
I don't have our list right in front of me. I will look for that. I'm not sure, but we do have a database of 12,500 names. So in addition to the names that we've published, which are over 4,000, we have another 2,000 that we will put online. It is very possible that he is in that larger database.
And if he's not, you're welcome to write to us. You can email us, and you can submit an entry on this person. In fact, that's what I'm so excited about. We have received many, many hundreds, even thousands of suggestions. Often, they weren't usable. I mean, if someone said, you don't know that my great uncle really invented the light bulb and Thomas Edison ripped him off. You know, we had to explore the historical veracity of the claim. But it generated many, many people that we never heard about. And one of those people was my fourth great grandfather. And I suggested to Evelyn that we might kindly include an entry on John Redmond, who was a free Negro who fought in the American Revolution. And with great distinction, I might add. And she said, fine, as long as I didn't write the entry, because I would have had him winning the American Revolution single-handedly. And that's what happens. But because Oxford is putting these 4,000 names online and an additional 2,000 yet to be written, the person who just called in could be a contributor to African American National Biography. And all you have to do is go on the Harvard website and email us with your suggestions, and we would welcome them most warmly.
And I should probably let the professor submit it, because it's from his list, and I'll have to let him know so he doesn't think I'm stealing his thunder. So thank you.
Okay.
You're welcome. Jennifer, good idea, but you'll never get anywhere in academe.
Thanks for the advice. I'll keep that in mind.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And I wanted to say, you two are the co-editors, but Professor Higginbotham, clearly you had a lot of help.
Yes, we had a lot of help because we had an editorial staff. And so we had help on a lot of different levels. We had help from Oxford with Caspar Grothwald and Tony Aiello. We had a number of managing editors over the years, but the one who is with us at the end is Stephen Niven. But I'd also like to emphasize the help that we had from contributors. You know, when Professor Gates and I first decided to launch this project, and we introduced the idea of having as many as 6,000 names, many people thought the idea was so ambitious it was ridiculous. And so we had to solicit many, many people. And those are the contributors who've helped us.
We're talking with Henry Louis Gates Jr. and Evelyn Higginbotham. Their new encyclopedia of African American biographies includes thousands that might have been forgotten, like George W. Bush, for instance. Heard of him? That's right. He was a little-known pioneer, the first non-native settler in the state of Washington. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A little later, we'll be helping those of you still struggling with your Valentine's Day mixtape. But right now, we're talking with Henry Louis Gates Jr. His new project, one of many, is a compilation of thousands of biographies of African Americans, from John Carruthers Stanley — he owned over 12,000 black slaves on his plantation — to Toni Stone, one of the three female baseball players in the Negro Leagues. Her batting average, .243. If you'd like to join the conversation, Professor Gates and his co-editor Evelyn Higginbotham are with us. 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can read what other listeners have to say on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. Gary's with us. Gary's with us from Middleton, Ohio.
Yes, my name is Gary Agee.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask about Daniel Arthur Rudd. I'm just completing a dissertation about this journalist and civil rights leader from Cincinnati, lived in the 1890s from Springfield, moved to Cincinnati, and wrote also two other books, including the biography of Scott Bond. And I just wanted to know if he was in the text.
Any idea about him?
Evelyn, do you remember? I don't remember if he's in there. I would think so, though. It rings a bell. Does it sound familiar?
It does sound familiar, but I must tell you that in these eight volumes, there are names that are not appearing. They are in our larger database. Right. If we couldn't find a person to write an entry in the time that we had to get this publication out, unfortunately, some names were missing. But we do encourage people to go on the Harvard website. Right. The names would be identified there. They are identified. If a name is missing, then we ask our contributors to volunteer to write about that person. If a name is there but there is no assigned writer, then we invite people to write about that person. So we would love to find out as well if Rudd is there.
And if he's not, maybe you could write the entry.
Yes.
I'd be happy to do that. Thank you.
All right. In other words, can't take notes for your dissertation today.
Okay. Neil, we have 1,700 contributors. This is the largest recovery project in the history of African American studies. And that number will expand. I mean, we could have possibly another 2,000 contributors for the one each for the 2,000 additional names. And there's so many African Americans. You mentioned George Washington Bush. And I have to say, I have two or three favorite characters in the Biographical Dictionary. But George Washington Bush, the real George Bush, by the way, is one of my favorites. I mean, this man worked as a trapper for the Hudson's Bay Company in the American West in the 1820s and the 1830s. And he settled in Missouri. And then in the 1840s, he joined with three other white families and went to Oregon Territory. And Oregon Territory had a rule that black people couldn't settle. So, being an intrepid person, he went to Washington Territory, which, of course, became Washington State. And he was a very, very prosperous person. And obviously, he was very popular because in 1855, his fellow citizens petitioned the Congress to allow him to keep the 65 acres that he had accrued and to remain there as a citizen. I'm sorry, 640 acres that he had accrued and remain there as a permanent citizen. Now, you just don't hear stories like that. Or Richard Potter. Richard Potter, Evelyn, I have to say, is my number one favorite. Because Richard Potter was born in 1783, died in 1835. Neil, he was a ventriloquist and a magician. At the age of 10, he stowed away on a ship as a cabin boy and went to England, the United Kingdom, where he met a magician called Ranny the Scot. And Ranny the Scot took a liking to him, made him his apprentice, and he became the dominant ventriloquist and magician of his time, came back to the United States and made a fortune. In fact, he had an estate, Potter's Estate, in the state of New Hampshire. It's still there, marked with a historical site. Now, who would ever have dreamed that in antebellum America, a black man could make a fortune as a ventriloquist and a magician? These people, Alice of Dunk's Ferry, who took tickets on a ferry in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, is the only person in the dictionary who lived through three centuries. She was born in 1686. She died in 1802. And she was a great oral historian. And people would come from miles around just to hear or see Alice of Dunk's Ferry or Stagecoach Mary, a black woman who worked with a group of nuns and was finally kicked out because they, well, accused her of murdering a man.
Well, their standards were higher in those days.
Yeah, he deserved it, you know, I think. But Stagecoach Mary was quite a colorful character in the 19th century. Deadwood Dick, Nat Love, the original Deadwood Dick. We all saw Deadwood on HBO. That was a black man. Nat Love, who published an autobiography. These are not characters who would have made it into an integrated American national biography. These people were trapped in the amber of the archive. They were in the purgatory of history. And what we've been able to do is to bring them back to life, to restore them to their proper place in American history. Evelyn?
Let's see if we can get another caller in, okay? Let's go to John, and John's with us from Lamoille in Nevada.
Hi. I guess you've just touched on what I was going to talk about. 5 years ago, I moved up here to become a cowboy. I'm 50 years old, and that's not real easy. But what I've learned is that probably 50% of the original cowboys in this part of the country were black, and their history is just amazing. Astronomers and philosophers and poets, and I'd like to see them included. I guess that's really all I have to say.
Now, we do have a lot of these kind of people included, but one of the points that I'd like to make is that it's interesting there were people very famous during their era, and yet they're lost to us from history.
Oh,
so one person is a man named Isaac Murphy, and Isaac Murphy was a jockey. Well, in the late 19th century, early 20th century, there were lots of black jockeys. And this particular man won many, many races. But now he's lost us in history. Yeah. Another one that I think is really cute, the predecessors to the Williams Sisters of Tennis. We have, of course, today everybody knows the names of Venus and Serena Williams. But not that many decades ago, in the 30s and in the 40s, there were sisters, Margaret and Romania Peters, also great tennis players, and they were called Pete and Repeat. So we have these names of people who, during their time, were stars, and yet history has forgotten them.
And given John's interest in the West, tell us a little bit about Cathay Williams.
Oh, Cathay Williams.
Yes.
Was Cathay Williams fantastic? She was a, what would he call her, cross-dresser? Cathay Williams passed for a man and joined the Buffalo Soldiers. Cathay Williams became William Cathay. Isn't that incredible? And apparently was subjected to several medical examinations, and her gender was never detected. Now, I don't know the nature of these medical examinations or the quality of the medical examiner, but somehow the sister got through. And finally, she outed herself in a press report. She gave an interview after she had left the military, and she applied for a pension. And for reasons that we have yet to understand, she wasn't given her pension, but it wasn't because she's a woman. And it's said that she, and we put this in the entry, that she joined, well, one theory is that she joined to be with her lover.
Yes.
But it only boggles the mind to figure out how this whole relationship unfolded out on the prairie with the Buffalo Soldiers patrolling the Native Americans. But that's Cathay Williams, and she's in here.
John, thanks very much for the call. Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Shelley. Shelley with us from Sacramento in California.
Hi. I was calling because I was wondering what the difference is between gathering information for Black histories and gathering information for white history. I don't have the opportunity to have Black history in my background, but having a history all the time was enforced when I was younger. You know, write a journal, write things down. When grandma tells you a story, write it down. And so I want to know the difference between how I was raised and how you gather histories for those with Black backgrounds.
Well, I don't think that there's any fundamental difference between the nature of historiography for white Americans or for Black Americans. The difference is that you were raised just as I was raised without the presence of Black people in our textbooks and in our curricula. You wouldn't know that there was such a thing as African civilization in the textbooks that I used in Piedmont, West Virginia, just 2 hours, 3 hours west of Washington, D.C., in the Allegheny Mountains and on the Potomac River. Black history was one day. One day. What do you mean one day? One 5-minute period on slavery. And it led up to Abraham Lincoln as our great liberator. And basically our teachers would say in a polite way, I went to white, you know, integrated schools. We called them white schools when I grew up. Irish, Italian, paper mill town, Piedmont, West Virginia. And people were very nice. The teachers weren't racist. But basically they would say, best thing that ever happened to you people, and that's what they would say, was getting sold into slavery, brought to the New World, as if slavery was a finishing school. And it saved us from our savagery and barbarism in the jungles of Africa. And then they would say, and if it hadn't been for Abraham Lincoln, you people wouldn't be sitting here today. And it was so humiliating.
But one point, though, I think it's important to mention here, is that history as a craft as a discipline has changed. We don't look at simply the great men and the presidents and the people who left their biographies and autobiographies and papers in the Library of Congress anymore. History itself has changed such that we look at the records of slaves and workers, and we look at newspapers and a variety of sources that give us new historical actors. And so in the last few years, Black people have come into the American narrative much more prominently because of the new methodology.
In that regard, I was reading your entry on Mary Elizabeth Bowser. It's an incredible story, an abolitionist activist who went and worked as a servant in the house of Jefferson Davis, the Confederate White House in Richmond, Virginia, during the war. And then at the end of this, I hear that the federal government, after the war, destroyed the records to protect the lives of the people who had worked with them in the South, and I guess you could understand that. And then that her family inadvertently lost her wartime journal that she'd kept. They lost it in 1952, and you could hear the silent scream of a researcher.
Oh, yeah. That so many of the stories of African Americans have been lost by the failure of repetition. When the person who just called in said her assignment was to write down the stories that grandma would tell, that's what I've been trying to encourage through our PBS series, African American Lives. Do your genealogy. Do it right now. If you're listening to this program, and sit down, interview your mother, your father, your grandparents, write down their stories, even if it turns out that stories are myths, as many of our family stories are. It is the basis. It's the beginning of restructuring the larger narrative, A, of your family, that means yourself, B, of the African-American people, and C, of the larger American people, the story of the great American nation. Because our voices have been excluded, bracketed, smothered, muffled, use the metaphor you want. And we have to retell American history from the ground up, from the kitchen table or the parlor up. And that this is the generation of black genealogy. This is the generation that's going to restore all of these people to their proper place as actors in the American narrative.
Shelley, thanks for the call. We're talking with Professors Henry Louis Gates and Evelyn Higginbotham, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Here's an email we have from Eve in Chicago, a suggestion for the biography, Retired Captain Ken Johnson, founder of NNOA, Organization to Recruit Blacks for the Naval Academy, which had very few blacks when he was at the academy. His son, Kenny Jr., just ran unsuccessfully for the Illinois State House of Representatives from Chicago's 2nd Ward and thus has a website. Johnson Sr. just died and will be buried next week at Arlington Cemetery. The information about Captain Johnson was sent out to all of us who worked for his son in the campaign. Here's another, this from John Tome. What about Major Taylor, probably the best cyclist of all time, better than Armstrong, easily.
He's in there.
Major Taylor is totally in there. World champion cyclist. He died in 1932. Let's see, he was born in about 1878. And Major Taylor was the man a world champion cyclist. When Evelyn mentioned Isaac Murphy, he won the Kentucky Derby
three times.
Being a jockey in the Kentucky Derby was, an African-American position for many, many years. But we've forgotten that. So with this person that just recommended, she should email us if she wants to volunteer to write a 500-word entry.
And Major Taylor's in there.
I mean, no, not Major Taylor, the one before.
The one, the gentleman who wrote in before about the...
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
exactly.
I didn't want to lose that.
Okay.
But email us. Just go on the Harvard website. Send all the emails to Evelyn Higginbotham.
Let's get another caller on the line. Martha's with us from Tucson, Arizona.
Hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes. In the late 1940s in Detroit, Michigan, there was a very famous portrait artist by the name of Betsy Graves Reno, and she did a huge selection of portraits of famous American Negroes, some of at least the one of George Washington Carver, mm-hmm. It is my understanding, is part of the permanent collection of the Smithsonian. And mm-hmm. She was a friend of the family, and I tried to keep track or find out about this and have been unsuccessful. There was a thing called the Harmon Foundation.
Oh, yes, quite famous.
Washington, that was supposed to be in charge of them, but I don't know what happened. But I hope you can find these paintings.
Well, I think it was her painting that the United States government used as a model for the stamp of George Washington Carver I can't remember when the stamp was first released, but the Harmon Foundation sponsored many of the most important African-American artists in the first half of the 20th century. So that's a very...
I tried to Google them, and I was unsuccessful, but I'll try more. She did a beautiful portrait of from George Washington Carver through Joe Louis, mm-hmm. Marian Anderson, and they're all large, beautiful paintings, and I just would hope that one day they could be reassembled. This was the United Nations was just forming, and the war was just ending, and there was a growing interest in Africa, and my family happened to be very interested in this. And mm-hmm. Betsy stayed at our home, and she's a wonderful and interesting lady. And I hope that they can be put back together.
Martha, it's a great suggestion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for the call.
Okay, thanks.
Neil, just one correction. Remember when you were talking about John Carruthers Stanley?
Yes.
I think you said 12,000 slaves. He owned 163 slaves in North Carolina. But, you know, it raises an interesting point. Half of the free Negroes in 1860 lived in the South and remained in the Confederacy and the border states in which slavery was legal throughout the entire Civil War. And many of the heads of households owned slaves themselves. And we write about these people. The black experience is enormously complex.
Yeah.
Enormously.
Professors, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Henry Louis Gates and Evelyn Higginbotham, both of Harvard, in our bureau in New York. Coming up, if music is the food of love, how's your mixtape going? Stay with us.